Zaytuna Knowledge Resource presents The Fiqh of Ramadan, according to the great scholars of the Maliki Madhab, taught by Brother Muhammad Rami Insur.
Bismillah wa salatu wa salam ala Rasulillah.
If in a voluntary fast you break your fast unintentionally, you do not have to make up that day, but if this happens in the obligatory fast, you have to make up that day. So here he only talks about making it up, but it's a correct fast. So keep fasting if you're doing a non-obligatory fast. The question was, as far as making wudu when you're fasting, how do you do the madmada, the rinsing of the mouth? And the answer is that if you're the regular madmada, when you're not fasting, you get water in all of your mouth. But when you're fasting, you should just do it right in the front of the mouth. So you just put a little bit in and just swish in the front of the mouth and then spit it out. And the same thing with the nose. When you're not fasting, you're not supposed to get water really high up into the nose. It's just a light snuff. But when you're fasting, you should be more careful and you won't do it as much. Any other questions before we continue on the text? Okay, we're on the section of Kafara 23.13. Who owes Kafara? وَإِنَّمَا الْكَفَارَةُ عَلَى مَنْ أَفْطَرَ مُتَعَمِّدًا بِأَكْلٍ أَوْ شُرْبٍ أَوْ جِمَاعٍ مَعَ الْقَضَاءِ. So we left off on the last thing was saying that if a person has traveled less than the distance needed to shorten the prayers and breaks their fast, thinking that they can break their fast, then they did not have the right to make up that fast. But because it was a reasonable explanation for why they broke their fast, they do not owe a kafara. The kafara is feeding the 60 people, fasting the 60 days consecutively, or freeing the slave. So if a person, say he just traveled from here to San Jose, and then after, in the middle of the journey, he said, well, you know what, I'm a traveler. The Quran says that if you're traveling, you can break your fast. I'm going to break my fast. He wasn't the required distance needed to shorten your prayers, and also the required distance needed to break your fast. So he did not have the right to break his fast. But because he had a valid excuse, he does not owe the kafara, which is like an expiation or a penalty, for intentionally breaking the fast without a reason. So then Ibn Abi Zayd says, kafara only applies to people who break the fast deliberately, either by eating, drinking, or sexual intercourse. So if a person does either of those three things deliberately during the daylight hours of Ramadan, when he's supposed to be fasting, he or she, then they break the fast is broken. They have to make up that fast, and then they have to do the kafara for each day they do that. And then the actual day when the kafara was incurred must also be made up on top of the kafara itself. So if a person is required to pay a kafara he just broke the fast without a valid reason, he has to pay the kafara, and he also has to make up that day. Some people think that by feeding the 60 people or fasting the 60 days, that wipes out the whole thing. You're finished with the kafara and you're finished with that day. But they still have to make up that day and then fast. So if they're going to fast 60 days consecutively, they're actually going to be fasting 60 days and then one more day to make up that day for Ramadan. Or freeing the slave, they free the slave and then they make up the day. Or they feed 60 people and then they make up that day. Or they make up the day before that, doesn't, no particular order. والكفارة في ذلك إطعام 60 مسكينا لكل مسكين مد بمد النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم فذلك أحب إلينا وله أن يكفر بعتق رقبة أو صيام شهرين متتابعين. So what is the kafara? The kafara for breaking the fast consists of feeding 60 poor people with one mud each, for each person using the mud of the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم. So the mud, like we were mentioning earlier, is half a liter of food. And so the mud is by volume, it's not by weight. So if a person is going to figure it out, they would take half a liter and then fill it up with the rice or the wheat, whatever is the dominant staple of that people. So here in the States, the people would, or at least in our area, they would either give it out from rice or wheat or one of the other grains that are commonly used. You can't say, well, I'm going to give 60, the equivalent of 60 people, which would be 30 muds, to one person. It has to be 60 different people. So that's why it gets a little bit complicated. So if a person's going to give it to somebody to give out, make sure that that person knows that, look, it's not 60 muds to one person. It's 60 different miskins. The question was, can mud be something like meat or milk? It has to be from the dominant staple grain of the people, which would either be rice or wheat. And that's using the mud of the Prophet ﷺ. And this is the preferred way of doing kafara according to us. So according to the Maliki scholars, out of the three ways you can do a kafara, the best of the three is the feeding the 60 people, because they said that the benefit goes to many people rather than just to, like in the fasting, it's just to yourself, or to the slave, it's just to one person. The feeding is to many different people. However, it is possible to carry out kafara by freeing a slave. So freeing a slave is also... you can do the kafara. So that would be one freeing one slave for every day. Or fasting... What's that? One slave for every day. Each of these things of kafara is for every single day. Or fasting two consecutive months. So then the fasting, the 60 days, like the Quran says, the shahrayn mutatabi'in, it's 2 months consecutively, 60 days. It doesn't mean, well, I'll fast 10 days and then 10 days and then 10 days. It means you fast 60 days altogether without breaking them up. The only excuse for not having it consecutive would be the two Eids, like we were talking about yesterday, that if the Eid falls during those 60 days, you're exempt from fasting, or if you're sick. But otherwise, you have to fast all those 60 days consecutively. And that's 60 days for every single day that you owe in Ramadan. When you say miskin, does it have to be a calf? Does it have to be a... No. And then the miskin, the question was, can the miskin, can it be, is it, does it have to be a Muslim, or can they also give it to the kafir miskin? When you're doing the kafara or giving the zakat fitr that we're going to talk about, it has to be to a Muslim. وَلَيْسَ عَلَى مَنْ أَفْطَرَ فِي الْقَضَاءِ رَمَضَانِ مُتَعَمِّدًا كَفَّارَةٌ. Someone who breaks the fast deliberately while making up a day of Ramadan does not owe a kafara. So say you're doing a qada of a Ramadan day. You're making up a day that you missed in Ramadan. During that day of makeup, you intentionally break your fast. You don't. You still have to make up that original day, but you don't have to pay a kafara. And the reason he's mentioning this is because somebody might say, well, this is like it's a day of Ramadan in that I'm making it up from Ramadan and I broke it intentionally without a valid reason, so it should be treated like Ramadan and I have to pay a kafara. And they're saying, no, that's not the case. That the breaking, the paying the kafara is only if the fast was broken during Ramadan. Whereas if here in this situation you're making up a fast from Ramadan and then you break that fast without a valid reason, then you don't have to pay a kafara. وَمَنْ أُغْمِيَ عَلَيْهِ لَيْلًا فَأَفَاقَ بَعْدَ طُلُوعِ الْفَجْرِ فَعَلَيْهِ قَضَاءُ الصَّوْمِ. If someone becomes unconscious during the night and recovers consciousness after Fajr, he should make up a day. You don't have to be in a awakened state at the time of Fajr, like we were talking about the intention. The intention, you can make one intention at the beginning of Ramadan for the entirety of that month. And you don't have to have it every night before Fajr. But if a person is going to have an intention, like say they were traveling and they have to renew their intention, that intention has to be made before Fajr. If the intention is delayed past Fajr, then that fast is not valid. So similarly, if a person is unconscious at the time of Fajr, then he's not able to make an intention, because part of being able to make an intention is that you are a sane adult with consciousness. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're awake. But if you were awake, you have your mind. You're able to speak and respond. You have full use of your mind in that respect. But if a person is unconscious during the night for sickness or for whatever reason, and then he only gains consciousness after Fajr, he should make up that day because he wasn't in a state where he could have an intention. وَلَا يُقْضَى مِنَ الصَّلَوَاتِ إِلَّا مَا أَفَاقَ فِي وَقْتِهِ. He only has to make up a missed prayer if he comes to during the time it is due. So if a person is unconscious for whatever reason, they do have to make up that fast that they missed. But the prayers, they don't have to make up any of the prayers unless they woke up or they regained consciousness during one of the prayers times. Like say, before Fajr, he got really sick and became unconscious. So his fast is not correct. He has to make that one up. The Fajr prayer, he doesn't have to do because he's unconscious. And he doesn't regain consciousness until after Asr. So he would not have to make up the Fajr, but Dhuhr and Asr he would have to pray because it's still their time. If he regained consciousness after Maghrib, Fajr, Dhuhr and Asr he does not have to make up, but Maghrib he would have to make up. So that's correct, because for the sleeper, even though he's not awake, his being asleep is not because of unconsciousness, because of sickness or being hit on the head. He's asleep. So if you're asleep, you can have, like if say you slept for 5 days straight and you woke up, you have to make up all those prayers. Whereas if a person was unconscious for 5 days, he does not have to make up those prayers. Because if a person's unconscious, he doesn't have responsibility. Yeah, you have to do that. If the question was, if a person is a fast a portion of the month, then during the month they get sick, when they begin fasting again, like say there's 10 more days left from Ramadan, they can make one intention, and that's good for the remainder of Ramadan. But they have to renew their intention. There's not that much more of the text. Let's get through the remainder of the text, and then general questions we'll take at the end of the text. So other prohibitions in the fast. وينبغي للصائم أن يحفظ لسانه وجوارحه ويعظم من شهر رمضان ما عظم الله سبحانه وتعالى. So when you are fasting, you should guard your tongue and limbs. So he said these are things prohibited in Ramadan, but these are also things that are prohibited the rest of the year. It's just that when you're in a sacred time or a sacred place, the prohibitions become there's more sin attached to a prohibition. So if something's haram, it's haram the entire year, it's haram wherever you are. But it'll be more haram if you do it in Mecca, or if you do it in Medina, or if you do it in Ramadan, or if you do it at the masjid. So whenever you're in a sacred time or a sacred place, the hurma becomes increased. So that's why he's reminding here that during Ramadan, because it's a sacred month, that a person should be more aware of guarding their tongue and guarding their limbs. So all of the muharramat, and we can't of course go through them, but if a person... was getting ready for Ramadan, they like go through all their fard ayn, and once they know they're haram, now Ramadan, you focus on implementing it. That so the maharam al lisan, like the text for the prohibitions of the tongue, for the tongue and the eyes and the ears, and then the other texts that talk about what's an obligation upon you and what's haram for you to do. You should be doing that. We all should be doing that the entire year, but especially focused in Ramadan. And not to make it to where somebody says, well, I'm going to leave the haram during Ramadan, and then when Ramadan's over, I go back to it. Because I know Ramadan's sacred. It's you're increasing your awareness during Ramadan, so that when Ramadan's over, it'll carry you throughout the rest of the year. And that's the same idea like the prayers. If everybody knows that during the day, you can kind of get off track, and then the prayer brings you back. Your mind will be everywhere. Your mind will be wandering. You'll be doing a lot of things. Then you pray, and then for those few minutes right after the prayer and during the prayer, you have this somber presence, kind of like a heightened state of awareness that now you realize what you should be doing, and it carries over, and then it fades away, and then the next prayer comes to kind of rejuvenate that. So the same thing for Ramadan. Ramadan is to get you charged up to take you through the rest of the year. So a person shouldn't say, okay, I'm going to really be careful about guarding from the haram during Ramadan, but then during the rest of the year, I'm going to be lax with it. Like, I'll give you an example. There was a lady that was wearing hijab just during Ramadan, and then she took it off afterwards because she thought that, you know, Ramadan, I can't go around without hijab, but in the rest of the month, it's all right. Allahu ghafur rahim. Allah is forgiving. But that's not the mindset that when we go into Ramadan saying that we're going to be more careful about the prohibitions and guarding the obligations. It's just to prepare us for the rest of the year. And then he says, and honor the month as Allah has honored it. So just like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has placed a sacredness to the month of Ramadan, then we should recognize that and try to give as much respect to the month as we can. And this respect isn't dictated by cultural, so-called cultural respect. It's the way the Prophet ﷺ and the Sahaba respected it. So they respected it like he's going to mention about prayer. So you increase in your dhikr, you increase in your prayer, you increase in your remembrance of Allah, your dhikr, your recitation of the Qur'an, your giving of sadaqah, your fulfilling all the obligations, everything, the obligations and the non-obligatory acts, you increase them in Ramadan. But what it doesn't mean is that we don't honor the month by having feasts, extravagant feasts, because most of the time when people have those feasts, they fill themselves up with food that they could have just eat what they need, and then anything extra give to the fuqara, give it in money or give it in uncooked food so that they can actually use it, and then so they rob themselves and the fuqara of that reward of spending too much money during Ramadan. Then they eat too much food and they're not able to do their ibadah. So then again, they're robbing themselves. Then when they get around and their stomachs are too full to do ibadah, but they have enough energy to speak, to talk. So then they'll just spend hours and hours speaking and talking and laughing and joking, and they're not going to pray tarawih, and they're not going to increase in their ibadah. And eating more food is just going to make them more lazy from doing their ibadah. It's going to give the nafs energy to do what the nafs likes, which is talking and joking and laughing and being with people they like. But that's not what you, if you want to break your fast with people, that's good. But just break it on a simple meal, and then focus on ibadah. Don't focus on making the Ramadan a month of feast. And I heard that during Ramadan, export and import of food in the Muslim world increases in Ramadan. Everybody knows that. Whatever culture, everybody wants to make these lavish feasts for iftar, but that's not the sunnah. The Sahaba actually decreased their overall intake of food during the month of Ramadan. So a person shouldn't say, well, you know, I'm only going to get one real meal during the day now, so I'm going to have to like make it equal to three of my other meals. No, it's eat a good meal, get liquids in the body, wake up. If you want to have two meals, you can actually lead a healthy life having two meals a day. So if during Ramadan you have one for your iftar and then a good meal for suhoor, there's your two meals a day, and you'd be fine. You don't have to satiate yourself at the iftar time.
ولا يقرب صائم النساء بوطء لا مباشرة ولا قبلة للذة في نهار رمضان ولا يحرم ذلك عليه في ليلة.
A fasting man may not have sexual intercourse during the daytime in Ramadan, nor may he touch a woman or kiss her to gain pleasure. So it's not permissible for them to have intercourse during the daytime. As far as touching or kissing, it's makruh, it's disliked, unless he thinks that it's going to cause him to have the madhi or mani, an emission of a fluid, whether it be the madhi or the mani, then it would become haram. None of these things, however, is haram for him during the night. And the reason he mentions this is because it was abrogated hukum. Initially in Ramadan, it was haram during the entire month of Ramadan, daytime and nighttime. And then the abrogation came in the ayah, and the ayah he has translated there. And so it's no longer haram. Those things are not haram during the night.
ولا بأس أن يصبح جنبا من الوطئ ومن التذى في نهار رمضان مباشرة أو قبلة فأمذى لذلك فعليه القضاء وإن تعمد ذلك حتى أمنى فعليه الكفارة.
It does not matter if you wake up in the morning in a state of janaba because of having a sexual intercourse. So there's no problem in coming into the day in a state of janaba. A person doesn't have to say, well, I have to do my ghusl before fajr. No, you can do your ghusl before fajr or after fajr. It's better to do it before fajr, but if a person delays it until after fajr comes in, there's no harm in that. If you do get sexual pleasure during the daytime by touching or kissing, and this results in the emission of madhi, prostatic fluid, you must make up that day. So if a person did that makruh and during the day kissed or touched his wife, and then there was an emission of madhi, that invalidates the fast, and he has to make it up. But he does not have to pay a kafara for that. If you do it deliberately and the result is the ejaculation of many semen, you do have the kafara. If he does the makruh in touching or kissing and there is an ejaculation of many, then he has to make up that day, and there he has to pay a kafara. So that's the difference between the many and the madhi. If it results in madhi, there's qada, there's makeup, but there's no kafara. In the many, there's kafara and a qada. There's a makeup and the expiation.
ومن قام رمضان إيمانا واحتسابا غفر له ما تقدم من ذنبه.
Anyone who fasts Ramadan with belief and with awareness of doing of the reward for doing it is forgiven all of his previous actions. Actually, this in the Arabic, it's not who fasts Ramadan, who stands in the night of Ramadan. He's not talking about here. Of course, that's if a person fasts in Ramadan, there is a reward, a forgiveness for all for his sins. But what he's talking about here is referring to the hadith. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that whoever stands in the night during the nights of Ramadan in Tarawih with belief and awareness of the reward for doing this is forgiven all his sins. So that's specifically talking about the Tarawih prayer. That's 23.15. H. So that actually should be in the next section of the Tarawih prayer, because now he's talking about the Tarawih prayer, the rewards of the Tarawih prayer. Huh?
Right, but 23.15H should also be in that section. Because it says anyone who fasts Ramadan with belief and awareness, it's not who fasts. In the Arabic, is من قام Ramadan. Whoever stands in the night of Ramadan in prayer. Yeah, if you go to Taraweeh. Now, he's going to talk about Taraweeh. He says, if you go to Taraweeh, if you do Taraweeh prayer, you don't have to actually do it with the Jama'ah. You can do it at home, alone, reading قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهُ أَحَدٍ in every rak'ah. And you can only even be two rak'ahs. And if a person does it through the entire month, and he has iman with belief and with ihtisab, like he's doing muhasabah, he's looking over, reflecting on himself and what he needs to do, then it will forgive all his sins. من قام رمضان وإن قمت فيه بما تيسر فذلك مرجو فضله وتكفير الذنوب به والقيام فيه في المسجد الجماعات بإمام ومن شاء قام في بيته وهو أحسن لمن قوت نيته وحده. So he says, if you stand up in prayer during the night, to the extent that you are able to, you can expect great good from it and pardon for your wrong actions. So he's just talking about that there's a lot of reward in the Taraweeh prayer. These night prayers are done with an imam. So he says, if you stand in prayer during the night, so this is the Taraweeh prayer, to the extent that you're able to do so. So you can do two rak'ahs, you can do four rak'ahs, you can do six, any intervals of two, 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 and two, as many as you want. You can do 8, you can do 20, you can do... Umar ibn Abdul Aziz used to have in the masjid in Medina, they would do 36. Umar radiallahu anhu, he's the one that got the people together and had them do 20. So that's... any number is fine. Now, these night prayers are done with an imam in mosques where the prayer is normally done in jama'ah. So where there's normally a jama'ah, there should be an imam leading the prayer, leading the taraweeh prayer. So then you can either pray with that imam, or you can pray at home. Or you can pray with another jama'ah. If people want to pray in their houses, that's fine. You don't have to have a hafil of the Qur'an, recite the Qur'an. You can have any person do it. And you can, like I said, you can read any amount of Qur'an, even if you want to do just قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهُ أَحَدٍ, like two, and then قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ, two short surahs for every single rak'ah. If you want to do that together in a home, that's fine. If you want to do it in the masjid, The good thing about doing it in the masjid is that you hear, if you're not a hafiz of the Qur'an, you hear the entirety of the Qur'an recited during that month. If you want to do, you can do these night prayers at home. Indeed, this is considered better if your intention is strong enough for you to do them by yourself. So according to the Maliki Madhab, it's actually better to do the Taraweeh prayer at your house. As long as there's a jama'ah is being established. So if there's an imam and there's a jama'ah praying taraweeh, and by you leaving the jama'ah, it's not going to, you know, like if everybody says, well, I'm going to pray in my house, then there's no more jama'ah. As long as we have a jama'ah, a group of people holding down the jama'ah in the masjid, then for the remainder of the people, it's better for them to pray in their homes. And the reason for that is that the difference between the fard and the nafila is that the fard, it's always better to do out in the open. Because the fard is a sha'ira of Islam. It's one of the symbols of Islam. So you want people to always see that. So the fard prayer, it's better to do in the masjid. The nafila prayer, it's better to do at home. Zakat, it's better to give where people can see it. Sadaqah, it's better to give where people can't see it. So whenever there's a fard, it's better to do the fard out in the open. And a person shouldn't say, well, I fear riyat. No. Whether you fear riyat or not, do it out in the open to maintain the sha'air of Islam. So people always, like kids growing up that saw people pray, they're going to be more apt to pray than people that didn't see people pray. People that heard the adhan are going to be more apt to go to the jama'ah than those that grew up didn't hear the adhan. So have the sha'ira a play so that people always remember it. So the taraweeh, it's a sha'ira of Islam. As long as it's established in the masjid, then for the rest of us, it goes back to the original hukum of the nafila is better at home, because actions done in private, it's easier to gain sincerity in doing those actions when you're in private. So the nafilas that you do out in public are praying the jama'ah that's going to pray with the imam, or the nafilas that are immediately linked to the prayers. Like four before dhuhr, four after dhuhr. Four before asr, six after maghrib. Those nafilas, it's better to do those in the masjid, because even though it's not an obligation, they're a sha'ira
in the sense that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam would do those regularly. So those should also be maintained. So not only do we maintain the fard sha'iras, but also the sunnah sha'iras. So whether it's the sunnah of the prayers, or the Eid, the slaughtering for the Eid, or the slaughtering for the aqiqah, or whatever it is, those should be kept alive so that people, it's a constant reminder to them, this is the symbols of Islam.
The righteous people of the first community used to do these prayers in the mosque. وكان السلف الصالح يقومون فيه في المساجد بعشرين ركعة ثم يوترون بثلاث ويفصلون بين الشبع والوتر بسلام ثم صلوا بعد ذلك 36 ركعة غير الشبع والوتر وكل ذلك واسع ويسلم من كل ركعتين.
The righteous people of the first community, the Salaf al-Salih, they used to do the prayers, the Taraweeh prayer in the mosque, establish a jama'ah, and of course there were people at home that did that. They did 20 rak'ahs, followed by 3 rak'ahs. So they did 20 rak'ahs of nafila, followed by 3 rak'ahs of shafi' and witr. 2 for the shafi' and then 1 for the witr. And later they began praying 36. And this was during the khilafah of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. They would do 36 rak'ahs, not including the shafi' and witr. Then with the shafi' and witr, it becomes 39 rak'ahs. And he was doing this because he was in Medina, and his reasoning was that people in Mecca, they're getting the reward of doing tawaf and seeing the Kaaba and all the extra reward associated with Mecca. So he wants to increase the amount of prayers done in Medina so that he kind of equals out with the people that are doing their ibadah in the haram of Mecca. And both of these are acceptable, and actually anything, the translation, it says, وَكُلُّ ذَلِكَ وَاسِعٌ. He said it's actually wide. The Salaf al-Salih added, made it 20. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz made it 36. You can do anything. You can do 2, 36. You can do 50. You can do 100. You can do as many as you want. And don't be like the people that think that you can't do more. So like sometimes you'll see them at the masjid after 8 rak'ahs, a good portion of the people, or depending on where the masjid is, will actually leave because they say anything else is a bid'ah. So then they'll stand outside the door smoking cigarettes and talking and laughing and disturbing the people that are praying. And that's what they do. So it's kind of, and that's a sign that they're bid'is. Because bid'ah always will contradict itself. Like in the Quran it says, if they found the Quran from other than Allah, if the Quran was from other than Allah, they would have found much contradiction in it. So they said the characteristic of truth is that it does not contradict itself. The characteristic of batil, of falsehood, is that it'll always contradict itself. So if you're so holy that you want to do exactly what the Prophet ﷺ did, and you don't want to pray more than 8, why are you smoking cigarettes, first of all? And why are you standing around laughing? If it was that important, go home and recite Quran, go home and go to sleep so you can wake up at the end of the night to recite. Do something else, don't stand around laughing and joking and smoking cigarettes. So that's a proof that even though they're saying they're following the Prophet, it's like Umar radiallahu anhu says, كَلِمَةُ حَقٍ أُرِيدَ بِهَا بَاطِلٌ. It's a word of truth, but their intention is bid'ah. Your intention is not sincere, and we can see because of those contradictions. Now, if a person wants to do that, to follow the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and he's not going to make a show of it, not yell at people for, like they, I heard a story of one man, there was in the community, there was a fitna. People were saying 8 rak'ahs in masjid. No, they should do 20. And so then there was arguments and a split in the jama'ah because of that. So they asked this one man, and he came and he said, the matter of the taraweeh, he asked him, he said, what's the taraweeh? What's its hukum? It's a nafila. He said, what's unity amongst the Muslims? It's a fard. He said, so why are you giving up a fard because of a nafila? Because of what you think, you know, a dispute about a nafila, you're compromising a fard. So then they realized what they were doing was mistaken.
Then he says, وقالت عائشة رضي الله عنها ما زاد رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم في رمضان ولا في غيره على 12 ركعة بعدها الوتر. That Aisha رضي الله عنها said that the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم did not do more than 12 rak'ahs of nafila in Ramadan or outside of Ramadan, and then after that the witr. And there's different hadiths, like there's a hadith in the Muwatta. So with 12 rak'ahs followed by 1 rak'ah of witr, it would make it 13. And the hadith in Muwatta is 10, and some say 15, some say 17, and then some say 9, some say 7. There's many different, there's narrations, 7, 9, 11, 12, 15. So there's depends on which narration it is. And some said that in Fath al-Bari, he said that the reason there's different narrations is because
he would pray at different times, he would pray different amounts. And it would be depending on how much time he had, the health, if he had things to take care of with his family, with the community, whatever it was. So the important thing is that just pray whatever you're able to. But people should also be reminded that the Taraweeh prayer is a nafila. And before nafila, we have to do the fard. So if people have makeup prayers that they have to make up, qada, then they should be doing those qada prayers before the nafila. And you'll find people, if you go to the masajid, you'll see in Ramadan people come out of the woodworks for the Taraweeh. People that you never see in any other jama'ah prayer, you never see them the rest of the year, but at Taraweeh you'll see them. In the faces that you've never seen. And you most definitely find people that go to Taraweeh and they won't miss a single rak'ah of Taraweeh, but they don't pray their fard prayers. Or maybe they do pray their fard prayers, but they have a few years they owe and they're not making them up. Or they're making them up, but during the time of Taraweeh, they're going to say, oh, I'm going to pray Taraweeh and not make them up. So if a person owes qada prayers, they have to be making them up and not do Taraweeh. So in the time of Taraweeh, stay at home and just do your qadas. So instead of doing 20 rak'ahs of Taraweeh, of nafila, which with the recitation of Qur'an at a normal speed takes about an hour, an hour and 15 minutes. Spend an hour and 15 minutes making up your fard prayers. And like Imam al-Akhdari said in his text on the Salah al-Tahara, he said if a person owes prayers, they have to be making up 5 days worth of prayer for every day to not be considered in a state of tafriq. What is tafriq in English? Carelessness. Like they're careless. If you're careless about making up your qada prayers, there's a sin attached to it. So if a person does not want to be careless, they have to be making up 5 prayers a day. Now those 5 prayers, that means subh, dhuhr, asr, maghrib, isha, that's 1 day. Subh, dhuhr, asr, maghrib, isha, that's 2 days. So you do that, so you're actually praying 25 prayers. Now somebody might think, well, 25 prayers. If you break it down to reading just Fatiha and just say qul huwallahu ahad, and you do your rakur, you're not doing iqamas for every prayer, and you're doing just the bare minimum, you're not doing a lot of tasbih, you're doing 1 or 2 or 3, and then you're going up, you can do 25 prayers in 50 minutes. Because 10 prayers, it'll take you 10 minutes. You just try it. For people that owe prayers, do prayers just Fatiha, qul huwallahu ahad, and then do subh, dhuhr, maghrib, asr, isha, and you'll do that in 10 minutes. 5 prayers is 50 minutes. So 50 minutes, when you break it down like that, that's Taraweeh time if you're doing Taraweeh. That's if a person goes to sleep after Fajr, by the time they wake up to go to school or to go to work, 8 or 9 o'clock, if they had stayed up, they could have prayed that thing and took a short 20-minute nap or, you know, something. So spend an hour of the day, whether it's in Ramadan or outside, doing the makeup prayers. So before we go to the Zakat al-Fitr, we'll take any questions on Ramadan, on the fasting. Right, the meni is sperm. The wadi? That usually comes out after urination. So that's not associated with like sexual pleasure or anything. Yeah, there's nothing for that. Yeah. When a person is making a prayer, they leave all nafilas except for the sunnahs. The sunnah prayers, like when you hear people, we're talking in the terms of like hukum. If the Prophet ﷺ did something, it's considered a sunnah. But it may not have the hukum of sunnah. Like for example, the Prophet ﷺ would cover his head sometimes outside of the prayer. But it's not a sunnah to cover your head. You understand that? He did it, so it's a sunnah in that sense. But it's not. It doesn't have the hukum of a sunnah to cover the head. Other things that do have the hukum of the sunnah, you pray those. Like if it's a prayer, and that's considered the 2 Eid prayers are sunnahs. The solar eclipse, but not the lunar eclipse. The solar eclipse prayer is a sunnah, and then the drought prayer is a sunnah. The praying for requesting rain. Those you do pray even if you have makeup prayers. The shafi' and the witr is a sunnah. And the shafi' is a nafila prayer, but because it's immediately linked to the witr prayer, it's given the hukum of the sunnah. So it's considered like a sunnah even though it's a nafila prayer. So you pray the shafi' and the witr. And then the 2 rak'ahs before your obligatory subh prayers, the raghiba, that's between a sunnah and a nafila. It's the only one in that category. It's considered a raghiba, and you do pray that prayer. Everything else, you leave. And just remember, one fard prayer is better than a million nafilas. Because Allah didn't make a nafila obligatory on you. If you leave every single nafila, like the Bedouin that came to the Prophet ﷺ and asked him about the fard, he said, what's the fard? He said, he told him about the zakah, he told him about the prayers. He said, I'm not going to increase or decrease on this amount. And when he walked away, the Prophet ﷺ told the Sahaba, he said, if you want to see a man of Jannah, look to this man. So that's all you have to do. If you don't have to, you don't even have to use your miswak your whole life. You don't have to brush your teeth. Now there's people, if they hear that, they're like, how can you go a day without brushing your teeth? It's not fard to brush your teeth. You don't have to do it, but it's a sunnah, it's good to do it. But you can leave that your whole life. You can leave doing every single other sunnah, every single other sunnah prayer. As long as you do your fard prayer, you know, you're fine. So there's no sin attached to leaving a sunnah prayer, to leaving a sunnah. That's why Umar radiallahu anhu said that leaving one haram is better than 70,000 hajjis, 70,000 umrahs, 70,000 dinars in sadaqah, 70,000 horses given to be used fi sabilillah. So for leaving one haram. So if a person realizes that doing the obligation or leaving the haram is better than all those actions, then they'll say, okay, I'm going to make up my prayers. I'm not going to pray taraweeh. I'm not going to pray duha. I'm not going to pray any of the other non-obligatory actions. Yeah, it should be for taraweeh. And if that's the reward for taraweeh, which is a nafila, then you can expect the reward for Ramadan is more. Well, the minhaj you're talking about is a sunnah. Like, we considered, like, alhamdulillah, that we're following the scholars that are following the sunnah. So anybody else that has different ideas about their take on Islam, they're either a bid'i or a fasiq. So if you have a group of bid'is or a group of fusaq go out to sight the moon, and they come back and they tell you, as long as the group is large enough that it's impossible for them to have gotten together and lied about it, then you can take their opinion. When they talk about the mustafila, or the mustafila jama'ah they give for that, for the sighting of the moon, some said up to 120 people. Because then, by that time, it's too. Others said it's going to different. You could be 10, 15. It really depends on that group of people. You could get 1,000 people, and it's easy for them to get together and say, hey, let's lie about this. Or you could get 10 people, and it's going to... There are people that maybe they don't even fast or they don't even pray, but they will never lie. So it just depends on who are the people that sighted the moon. There's a question about fasting, making up, because Aghdari said 5 prayers a day. Some of the scholars said 2 prayers a day. And that is it's an opinion, but it's not a strong opinion. So it is an opinion within the Maliki Madhab that as long as you're making up 2 prayers a day, that you're fine. Not 5 prayers. But the five prayers is the stronger of those 2 opinions. And the strongest opinion is that not only 5, but even more than 5 if you don't have other things to do. Like if you 5 is an hour. Nobody has an excuse not to do an hour's worth of extra prayers. You know, just get those out. Unless you're working, you get up after you pray Fajr, you're to the marketplace, you come back right at Maghrib time, you only have time during that time to pray your Fard, eat some food, go to sleep, then you could say, okay, this person, they can be doing a little bit less than 5. But 5, if you have extra time, it's actually wajib to be even doing more than that. If you're not occupied doing some other obligatory thing after 5. Yeah, well, you're going to get that because some people, they go off other countries. Some people go off groups that you don't know. The important thing is if you trust the masjid and you call them up and they say, yes, there's a difference between them saying, yes, we're fasting tomorrow, or yes, I saw the moon, or we have a group here that has seen the moon. So if you hear them, they say, we have a group here that's seen, who are those people? Because you might have somebody that doesn't know how to sight the moon. They might not be their testimony might not be accepted. You got to know who it is. So that's why get in contact with the community that you actually know. And the reason for this, somebody might say, well, why? You know, if we trust the message, the reason for this of being so scrupulous about sighting the moon is to prevent people from wrongly sighting it and then affecting the whole. Like if at each individual level, we have every person saying, I'm not going to fast Ramadan until I'm absolutely sure that either I saw it or I know somebody that saw it. Or I know somebody who saw. I know somebody who knows somebody who saw it. But each of those people in that length is really reliable. Then, if everybody's doing that, we're going to wipe out false sightings of the moon, and then have that effect. Which it happens. It happens in America. It happens in other countries. You can talk to people. Sometimes they get together, and people will get together. We've heard stories of saying, "Let's sight the moon," or "Let's say that we sight the moon," just so we can get our name on the radio or we get on the television. The Muslim, yeah. Any other questions before we finish up?
So we're on, according to the sighting of Yusuf Ismail, we're on day 28. So people should go out to look for it tomorrow. According to the astronomers, it's going to be impossible to see in the majority of the world tomorrow night. But even though they said that, we still go out to look for it. And tomorrow, so to, if it's not seen tomorrow night, then another day of Sha'ban. And then, yeah, so definitely Ramadan, well, as long, yeah, if we can see it on Tuesday night, then Ramadan's Wednesday. Then Thursday, yeah. But most probably, according to the, yeah, for sure, it has to be, because today's 28, 29, Sha'ban can't be 31 days. So if we don't see it Tuesday night, yeah, it has to be, Wednesday. Yeah, it has to be Wednesday. Yeah, because tomorrow's 29. Tomorrow's 29, Tuesday's 30, so it has to be Wednesday. There's a difference on Tuesdays. We'll get through the Eid al-Fitr because those ahkams are important because to pay for Zakat al-Fitr. وزكاه الفطر سنه واجبه فرضها رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم على كل كبير او صغير ذكر او انثى حر او عبد من المسلمين. So the zakat al-fitr is an obligatory sunnah, and the reason that they say obligatory sunnah is that it's a sunnah. It's not something that was established in the Quran, not like zakat of the other zakat. It was established in the Quran. This was established, it's an obligatory, but it's established only through a hadith. So that's why the fuqaha say it's an obligatory sunnah, meaning that it was obliged through the sunnah, but not through the Quran. Not directly through the Quran, but then again, everything the Prophet ﷺ makes an obligation is indirectly an obligation through the Quran, because the Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, whatever the Prophet ﷺ gives you, take it, and whatever he forbids you from, refrain. It's an obligatory sunnah which the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam made compulsory for all Muslims, whether young, old or young, male or female, free or slave. So all Muslims have to have this paid for. Now the young and the slaves, they're not going to pay it for themselves. They're going to have their parents or their owners pay for them. But it has to be given on every single Muslim for that. صاعٌ عن كل نفس بصاع النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم وتؤدى من رجل من جل عيش أهل ذلك البلد. Its amount is one sa', and the sa' is four muds. Measuring by the sa' of the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم, may Allah bless him and grant him peace. So the sa' is four muds. The muds is approximately 0.51 liters. So a 2-liter container is considered a sa'. And in going through the different measurements, whether it's liquid, whether it's measures or weights or volume, the different measures of the Sharia is very close to the metric system. So, like we were talking about the distance, the mile, the Shari'i mile is very close to 1 kilometer. The sa' is 2 liters. Mud is half a liter. It should be paid in using the staple food of the people of that region. من بر أو شعير أو سلت أو تمر أو أقيط أو زبيب أو دخن أو ذرة أو أرز وقيل إن كان العرس قوم قوت أخرجت منه. So you pay for, you give out the zakat in whatever it is, in the staple of food of the people of that region, whether it's wheat, barley, sult barley, dates, dried cheese, raisins, millet, sorghum, or rice. It is also said that if the staple of the staple food of the people is alas, and a different grain, which is a small grain similar to wheat, that the zakat al-fitr can be paid on that. So it's just based on the amount. Now, when you pay it, when it says pay, like you have people at the masjids saying, every zakat is $5 or $4 or whatever it is. According to the Maliki Madhab, it has to be given out in grain. It can't be given out in its qima or in its value. It can't be given out as a monetary value. What you can do if you want is you can give somebody money, and then that person in turn buys the grain and then gives it out in grain. As long as it's eventually given out in grain. So according to I believe it's the Hanafis that say you can give it out in its qima and its value. And so that's why they're doing it at the masajid. But at least according to the Maliki, it has to be given out in grain. Yeah, but if you're going to use a water bottle, it's going to be a 2-liter bottle. You're talking about for a mud or for a sa'? If it's the sa', if you're talking about, say, mud for like the pregnant woman or the nursing woman, it's going to be, yeah, like about one of those half a liter drinking bottles if they have them. Are we talking about the zakat al-fitr right now? Yeah, so the zakat al-fitr, it's like a 2-liter Coke bottle. The amount, which works out. I can give you the exact kilometers or pounds I don't have with me.
Dried rice, yeah. Not a Coke can, Coke bottle. The 2-liter Coke bottle, yeah, yeah. And I can email that if people... I actually have set up an email account for use by, like, if people have questions for Sheikh Sadiq, or they have questions that I could answer, or that Sheikh Sadiq or somebody. And so we've set that out, and actually, Mariam, you can put that out to the people. That, it's FATWAA, fatwa@gmail.com. Two A's. It has to be 6 letters, so they couldn't let it be one fatwa. And actually, that's because it's not fatwa in Arabic, it's fatwa. There's an elif there. So it's closer to the Arabic. So fatwa, FATWAA@gmail.com. And then if you email me that, whoever emails me with the question on the about this, about the measurement of the, once I figure out how much it is equivalent in rice, you can just, I'll email it to you. Then he's probably not miskeen. Yeah, if somebody's miskeen, the miskeen, there's two things. In the question was, if a miskeen says, I can't do anything with this rice, I want something else, then find somebody poorer than that person. There's people that will, he may say, okay, I don't eat rice, then he wants money. Then tell him he can sell it if he wants to. If he gets enough people giving him, you know, rice, he's gonna. But if he's Rashid, like if he knows what he's doing, if a person has financial difficulties, and they get say, 10 people give them their zakat al-fitr, that's probably enough rice for half a year, 6 months. So even if worse comes to worse, he can eat rice. So if a person, that's what it's like. It's kind of, there's a hikmah in it. Of, okay, he might want money. He can go blow the money on a Coke and a, you know, something else. And rice is really inexpensive. So if you give him $20, which some of those, you can buy those big bags at the Middle Eastern grocery, and they'll give you buy one, get one free on those bags. You buy two of those big bags, that'll take care of a family, at least for one of the meals a day. They're eating rice, and they can have whatever gravy or whatever else they want to put on that rice, but it can take them a few months. Yeah, if you paid it in money? If you paid it in money thinking it was valid, like most people, if they didn't know anything else, they were, it's, you know, Allahu alam, but it should be accepted. If you want to be on the safe side and just recalculate, it's not that much. Once you give it out, say 10 years or whatever, you can give it out, you know, you can give it out real quick. Now, if a person's married, he gives out one sa' for himself, one for his wife, and one for each of his children. And everybody that is under his, that he has to be paying. So if it's a married man, so the woman, she doesn't have to pay for it. It's on her husband to pay, the husband has to pay for her, give out the sa' for her.
وهو ويخرج عن العبد سيده والصغير لا مال له يخرج عنه والده ويخرج الرجل زكاة الفطر عن كل مسلم تلزمه نفقته وعن مكاتبته وإن كان لا ينفق عليه لأنه عبد له بعد ويستحب إخراجها إذا طلع الفجر من يوم الفطر ويستحب الفطر قبل الغدو إلى المصلى فيه وليس ذلك في الأضحى ويستحب في العيدين يمضي من طريق ويرجع من أخرى.
So the zakat al-fitr of a slave is paid by the master, and that of a young child who has no personal wealth by his father. A man has to pay the zakat on every Muslim for whose maintenance he is responsible, his wife, his children, and he or his wife, his children, his parents, if he's supporting his parents, and he should also pay for his mukatib, partially freed slave, because even if he is not responsible for his maintenance, the mukatib is nevertheless still his slave. When it is paid, it is recommended to pay the zakat al-fitr at daybreak on the day al-fitr. So you pay it on the daybreak of zakat al-fitr. In other lands, it's easy to find masakin. Usually they're somewhere in your neighborhood. So you can easily, before you go to praying the prayer, you pass by and you drop off at the miskeen, or you send it with somebody. Here it's a little bit more complicated, just because there's more wealth distributed amongst the people. You don't find that many miskeen accessible. But when it says paid, it just means that you now have consciously removed this from your personal property. So if you have the zakat al-fitr, buy it a few days before the fitr or week, have it on hand. Right after Fajr, you can put it aside. You can even put it aside in your house. But now you say, this is no longer my rice. This is what I give out in zakat al-fitr. And it may take you a few days to actually get it to that person that you're going to pay it to. the miskeen or the faqir is the faqir is a person who cannot, who does not have enough wealth to support him for 1 year, or maybe he doesn't have enough wealth to support him for 1 year, but he has a regular job. Like he's getting a paycheck every week, every 2 weeks, and his bank account, if you look at his bank account, it doesn't have enough to support him the entire year, but he has enough to keep him up. That's not a faqir. The faqir is a person who does not, either his work is not sufficing him, or he has no work and he doesn't have enough to take him for the year. The miskeen is the person who doesn't have enough for he goes day by day. So really the only miskeens that you see regularly in America are the homeless people, but they're not Muslim, so they can't accept for zakat al-fitr. Yeah, you can send your zakat overseas if you want to. But yeah. Right. You can send it. It doesn't have to be in your locale. Right. Meaning they don't have enough, they don't have anything. They have the clothes on their backs and they're looking for food. They don't have anything.
So, I know some people who literally go day by day. I mean, they have they go to the grocery store, they have some money.
Yeah, if you have more than a day, you're faqir. If you don't have anything for the day, like if you have $20, you're not a miskin in America, because you can $20 is more than enough for 1 day, for one person. You may be if you're more, but if you have more than $20, you're faqir. You're still a poor, but it's just the difference in category, miskin or faqir. As long as you have more food, like if you only have food for your day, just for today, saying, I only have enough rice for me and my family for today, you don't pay zakat al-fitr. But if you said, I have enough rice for me and my family for today and for tomorrow, you give your zakat al-fitr.
Okay, but
to receive,
can you only give it to someone who's a miskeen?
Yeah, you give it, or a faqir.
Okay, you can give it to everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And then for sending it overseas,
I don't know. Email me that question just so I don't forget. The question was, I said about if you bought the food and you put it aside in your house, or you don't even have to put it aside. It's in the intention. The intention, you're not like, this is not my money, this is not my wealth anymore. This is now the wealth of the fuqara, and I just have to get it to one of them. But the question was, if you're going to give it out in money to somebody, no, I don't think that's going to work, because you haven't actually bought the grain yet. Yeah, if you don't have somebody who is wajib for you to support you, you have to be paying for it. So if it's a woman, she's unmarried, or she's still living with her father's taking care of her, then she doesn't have to pay for it. If she's married, she doesn't have to pay for it. If she doesn't have a father or husband to support her, then she has to pay for herself. The children go back to the husband, because it's not wajib for her to support them, it's wajib for the husband. So the nafaqa is on the, it's whoever it's wajib for you to support, it's wajib for you to give the zakat of. So if you have a parent, if you have a father that you're supporting, you have to give, you give out for him. If you have a son, if you have a daughter, so forth. It is recommended to pay the zakat al-fitr at daybreak of the Eid al-Fitr. So it's recommended to do it after Fajr, before you go to the prayer. It has to be given out before Maghrib. And once it's delayed past Maghrib, it's haram to delay past Maghrib, but you still have to give it out. And if you have previous years, you just make qada of those years and give them out. And I think that's it. Is that it? No. Yeah, there's... on the morning of Eid al-Fitr, it is recommended to break your fast before leaving for the prayer place, whereas on the morning of Eid al-Adha, it is recommended not to do so. So, on the day of Eid al-Fitr, before you go to the place of where you're going to pray, break your fast. And it's break it with anything, but it's best to be broken with dates, an odd number, based on what the Prophet ﷺ did. And then on Eid al-Adha, the big Eid, you don't eat anything before the prayer. You break your you have breakfast after the prayer on the liver of your slaughtered animal, of your adhiya. That's what's the sunnah. You can eat beforehand, but it's sunnah to delay. The first thing you eat in the day should be a portion of the cooked liver, preferably of the animal that you're eating. On both Eids, however, it is recommended to go to the prayer by one route and return from another. So when you go to the Eid prayer, on your way back home, take a different route for both Eid prayers. And the reason for this is because everything that you pass by on your way to the prayer is bearing witness that you're in a state of ibadah. and is going to bear witness for you on Yom Al-Qiyamah that you're fulfilling these sunnahs and these obligations. So on the way back, you, if you pass by other things, other trees, other roads, other rocks, you're just going to increase the amount of creation that's going to bear witness for you on the Day of Judgment.
So any other questions? If not, we'll wrap it up for a second.
I have one question.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was gone over earlier in the section on. And then one thing that the question was that you'll see in the rest of the text before I'll go back to the question, sister. Dhikr, saying Allahu Akbar after the Eid prayer, that's only for the Eid al-Adha. And it's not like you go to the Musalla and you'll see people saying Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, La ilaha illallah, Allahu Akbar, Walillahi alhamd, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Don't do that on Eid al-Fitr. It's not the sunnah to be doing that on Eid al-Fitr. That's to be done on Eid al-Adha. So if you go, even if you see people just like doing that at the masjid, just say, no, that's not what we understand to be the sunnah. What's that? That's talking about Eid al-Adha. The takbir is after the prayer. You'll hear people do that before the prayers. But that particular form of takbir is to be done after dhuhr of the Eid al-Adha. And from after dhuhr until after for 15 prayers. And actually the sunnah is, if you want to do it, you can do Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, just three times, or Allahu Akbar, Walillahi alhamd, the other version. But it's not something, I guess people just kind of got it confused and they do it like before the prayer. You can do takbirs going from your house to the prayer, but that's done individually. So where it says like on both Eids, Eid al-Fitr and Eid al-Adha, the Imam should do dhikr of Allah out loud from the time he leaves his house until he arrives at the prayer place. Everyone else continues until the arrival of the Imam when they stop. You do your takbir from your house until the Musalla, but it's not like the way they're doing it, like they're doing the Allahu Akbar. And the, what was the question? 2311. Yeah, so 2311. Yeah, 23:7. 23:7, it says, someone who fails to make up missed days before the following Ramadan should also feed a poor person for each day they still owe. Does that answer the question? One mud, which is half a liter of food. That's the expiation, yeah. And tawbah. You do it by yourself, yeah. You do it by yourself. You just say Allahu Akbar, yeah, yeah.
Even at the masjid?
Huh? You're just saying Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar.
The masjid, I mean, they're in the same
right.
Cadence, you know? So, I mean, when you go to the masjid, you just sit there. And
just say, yeah, just say Allahu Akbar by yourself, yeah. There's a number of the faqir means that the homeless, like the example I was giving you, is that's the example of the miskeen. He doesn't have enough for one day. The faqir though is who doesn't have enough for a year. So you find people that you find plenty of people within the Muslim community that don't have enough for 1 year. That's why the Rahima is doing so much work, because they have, you know, there's plenty of Muslims that need that. I mean, the best thing to do is, because you don't have to tell him when you give it to him, this is Zakat al-Fitr. The best thing, if you know a person that kind of is aware of people within the community, he should, like with every small group of people, should delegate one person that kind of knows the community. He collects it up at his house, and you can even give it to him a few days beforehand, and then he gives it out on the day of Eid. Just goes around giving it out.
And he would do rice, right?
What? Rice, yeah. Or, I mean, if you give people wheat, they eat wheat here, but in bread form, and so nobody's actually grinding up. So the best thing is to give it out in rice. Yeah, the question was, if you're not praying Eid with your own community because of difference of prayer time or difference of Qibla or whatever it is, if you're not praying the Eid where it's wajib for you to be praying Jum'ah, then as soon as you... Eid prayer is Sunnah if it's wajib for you to pray Jum'ah. So if it's not wajib for you to pray Jum'ah, then it's not sunnah for you to pray Eid. It's mandub for you to pray Eid, and then it's done in an individual basis. Like in the school of Murabt al-Hajj, there's no Jum'ah. It's not wajib for them to pray Jum'ah. So when they pray the sunnah of Eid, every person does it on an individual basis. It's mandub. And so people that have qada prayer don't pray it. So once you travel from Monterey up here, it's no longer wajib for you to pray Jum'ah.
سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك اشهد ان لا اله الا انت
For more information on traditional Islam in America, please contact Zaytuna Institute at 510-582-1979 and on the internet at www.zaytuna.org.